So in this episode of Man Made, I have a pretty organic conversation with a colleague of mine named Amy McAllister. We met in Dallas, Texas, started practicing together way back in the late 90s, and have stayed in touch ever since. And lots of water has gone under the bridge in our lives since when we first started practicing. When we first started practicing, me, not her, I was a fucking know-it-all and knew that I was just the shit when it came to therapy. 20 years, you learn a lot about yourself, and a lot has happened in both of our lives that has helped us grow, be more realistic, more compassionate with ourselves and with the people that we work with. And it was a fascinating conversation. Hope you enjoy. Amy McAllister, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Jeff.
You have no clue what you signed up for, do you?
I have no idea, but I can't wait.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
It's going to be good. I can't wait to call you out on some stuff, too, publicly.
Oh,
it's gonna
here
be
we
so
go.
Fun.
It's going to be one of those. I had no idea.
I'm going to tell some stories about you, and I'm going to call you out on some things, of your listeners get to hear it all. It's going to be so fun.
Well, here we go. Well, then if we're talking shit, then I'm going to start by talking shit because you were running late because you end a session. Come on,
okay,
do you hear that?
I'm your guest. Jeff, I'm your guest.
That's
you
solid.
Have to be kind to me.
Have you listened to the podcast? The podcast does not roll that way, but I duly noted. That's fair.
No.
So you've been doing marriage therapy all day.
I was in session today from 10 until 4 my time, all day long, marriage.
And is it better for you to knock them out back to back, or do you like to break it up?
No, I need to get into a rhythm. What do you do?
Same thing, man.
Yeah.
Once I'm in it,
because if I take
break
a break,
out,
Yeah, I work through lunch, I do it all, but yeah. So it was a hot day in my office. It was like, I don't know if it's March. I noticed in March people are a little more edgy, I would say. But yeah, it was an exciting day in my office.
So what you and I both do a lot of marriage therapy. What are some of the trends or just kind of common things that you're seeing in marital relationships these days, if any?
No, totally. I would say, my focus is primarily like EFT stuff. I don't know what lens you work from. But so you have to remember, I think of it from that perspective, but lack of emotional intimacy skills, huge. Like people who just don't know how to show up and be emotionally vulnerable or intimate would be the core issue I see. Like I do more work with people around get the shit out of the way. Like, what is this really about? We're fighting about ketchup. We're fighting about bottles. We're fighting about this, but like, what is really going on? So I feel like that's there. Another trend I see is the strengthening of women. I feel like, you know, divorce rates are kind of stable. I think I'd be interested in your feedback, but I think with women becoming so much stronger and more self-sufficient, men are a little frazzled and or not knowing necessarily what to do with that per se. Some men, I think, love it. Some men do not, but it's throwing marriage itself into a different state from my perspective.
I would agree with that 100%.
Would you?
Yeah. I think we're just kind of in an evolutionary shift with marriage. I think I don't know exactly what it should become, but I just think we've got to be malleable with it and be open to, okay, what's the new expression going to be? I agree with you on the assessment of women. What I see, the vast majority of men that I work with, and this may be a Midwest thing, I don't know, they just fucking cower. Like, they become these little boys that are just like, oh, I'm sorry. And it's like, show up, man. That's not fucking sexy at all. Like, I'm not saying don't be dominant over her, but it's not her relationship to build. And then you get a to do, like, build the fucking marriage with her. Like, don't.
Right.
And she doesn't want you to dominate over her, but she sure as fuck doesn't want you to cower to her. And that's where I see guys like making the business for the right reasons, because I think they genuinely love their wives, but they're like, I'm sorry, honey, you're right. I'll try. Yeah. You know, it's like, stop saying that shit.
How do you think we've gotten there though? Because I feel like there's this shift from this like toxic masculinity, which is the dominant, I mean, in my mind anyway, I don't know all the right words for it, but it's like this dominant, what I say goes, male type, to this passive, like you're describing. And I'm like, how do we get to the middle? Because I feel like, you know, if we talk about the evolution of relationships and where it is now, where we want it to be, like we are more equal. Like what you're describing is like, let's build it together. Let's be equals in every way, financially, emotionally, spiritually, relationally, like, you know, skill wise, let's be equals. But why can't we get there? What has, cause I talk about this all the time. I'm like, how have men become so passive and so, I don't even know the word, but like what has happened?
I think a couple of different things. I think popular culture has portrayed men as buffoons for a very long time. Everybody loves Raymond, that sort of kind of thing. So that to the degree that that has affected the ethos of marriage, I don't know. But this is what I think the biggest thing is that. And I mean, we can open Pandora's box if you want, but I think it's an overreaction to toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
Most men that I work with are not toxic men. They're not, they're not like, you know, you fucking bitch, get in there and fix my fucking dinner. Like I've maybe had a dozen of those in 25 years of doing this or whatever it's been. But I think the really good men who love their wives have, those are the ones. It's like, I remember talking to this guy one time, or maybe I think it was Chappelle or somebody. He was making, no, it was Bill Burr. I apologize. Took me a minute to get there. And he was talking about seeing a billboard that said, if you're beating your wife, there's help. And it's like the abuser is going to, well, I'm not fucking beating my wife. My wife's a bitch.
Totally.
And, you know, it's like, but
it's her fault.
Right. But the men who hear about toxic masculinity and take heed of it are the good guys, and they don't want to be toxic. And so as an overcorrection to that, they have become passive.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I don't know that women aren't somewhat confused of thinking that, you know, if my husband has an opinion, he's mansplaining or things like that. So it's just like this, it's like, okay, with all of this, then what the hell is a healthy relationship? You know, it's like.
Well, totally. Don't you also think, Jeff, that for women, and I'll speak for myself and multiple women, hundreds of women I've worked with over the years, but we, whether it's just rhetoric or reality, a lot of women have felt very oppressed, very unequal, I will say. And so they also have overcompensated. And so any amount of I'll use the word deference or I don't want to say reverence, but they've also overcompensated for that feeling. And so they feel like they have to come out and prove how strong they are and how independent they are. And I think, you know, men at the same, they don't know what to do with that either. It's like, okay, how do I respond to this? Because this is, you know, this is new, this is different. And so that's a different shift too. And I'm with you on that. I don't know what it looks like because I definitely believe in marriage. Well, let me correct. I definitely believe in relationships, and I know that in our core, we need them. We want them, we crave them. And I really like to believe in long-term, the story you can build and all of that. But I feel like that we have a crisis of like, it's not working for whatever reason, because men are what they're doing. Women are doing what they're doing, and 100 other reasons. But,
and I think our definition of marriage is really archaic. It tends to be still so, whether consciously or subconsciously, deriving its origins in religion and till death do us part. And the sentiment of that, I'm not opposed to, but I'm a strong believer that, you know, when that idea was coined, mm-hmm. women did not have the positions that they can have now. Like women don't need men the way that they used to need men.
Not in any way, shape, or form.
And part of that mentality was to protect women, right? To the mm-hmm. seriousness of the bond so that women couldn't just be chucked outside and like,
right.
So there was a time where that was, I believe, pro-woman. You can disagree with me on that if you want. But women don't need men anymore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a potential beauty in that. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you, for perhaps the first time in human history, well, let's say it this way. Women are on as equal ground as they have ever been. I'm not saying they're Absolutely. On equal ground. I'm not saying we've arrived, any of that. But one of the inescapable realities is that, I mean, you're a professional woman, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You don't need a man.
I mean, no.
And I'm not, but then.
Not for survival, not for right. income, not for a roof over my head, not for safety, not for all of those functional reasons that marriage used to exist. Right.
And a lot of the reasons, a lot of the things that men used to provide,
right.
the things that
right.
men used, the traditional role,
yeah.
and that's
yeah.
not that far removed, right? I mean, that's like 50s, yeah. 60s kind of stuff that,
totally.
You know, dual income families is still a fairly new experiment, but it's like,
right.
we have to come to the understanding that relationships now are desire based.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
It's not want, love. It's not need, it's want, right?
Yeah, totally.
And for so long, evolutionarily and for other reasons, men have, well, I mean, in primitive times, men couldn't be vulnerable, right? They had to go kill shit. Like,
sure.
you know, you can't, like, how does it feel that you have to go kill something that might kill you, right?
That's like, Maslow. That's Maslow. It's
right?
like when you're worried about survival, you cannot advance to any of the other stages.
Right. And so, so we now live in this time that affords men the opportunity to be more vulnerable, which we're not fucking good at. I'm not good at it. And I fucking teach this shit. I'm still, it's something, my default setting is still to pull those emotions back.
Really? And I'm surprised.
Intellectually, I know.
I'm have so to, surprised, Jeff.
I'm a crier, but I have to practice it.
Yeah.
Like I have to, like Shrinking, have you watched Shrinking?
No, but I've heard
Sons of Bitches, you have to watch it. Oh my freaking yes. God.
I have heard I need to watch it.
But it's like I have to work at it. I have to watch certain movies that keep me in touch with my emotional yeah. vulnerability. It has to be for me yeah. as a man, it has to be a conscious practice. And
yeah.
and that's
Don't you think that's true for most men?
I think it's true for all men. I think that's, I mean, and that's one of the things I work with men that I work with is making yeah. that a conscious practice.
Yeah.
Because when we feel vulnerable, especially now, we want to, and this is what I see in men, when we feel vulnerable, then we become pathetic in relationship. I'm sorry. You're mm-hmm. right. And it's like, mm-hmm. She doesn't want you to be fucking sorry. She doesn't want to be right.
Yeah.
She wants you to connect with her.
Exactly. I was just going to ask you, what do you think that women want? And then I'll speak to it too.
What do I think?
In terms of vulnerability, like, what is it that you think, how is it that you think women want men to respond when they are vulnerable, or, you know, when a man is vulnerable? Yeah, I think I'll just go back to my original. Like, what do you think women want out of a man in terms of vulnerability? And
so I would say openness. That there is a profound difference between vulnerability and what I call shrinking or being pathetic.
Totally.
And I think, and this is one of the things that almost all men that I work with are very, very confused about. They think vulnerability, first of all, is weakness, and they associate it with just kind of like becoming pathetic, creating this, this subordinate position in the relationship.
Right.
And I work with men so much with like telling their partners the truth. Like, don't fucking lie about, hey, honey, if you want to go to the fucking bar and meet a guy and have a beer,
say it.
Fucking say it. And be man enough to handle her reaction to it.
Yes. Thank you, Jeff.
And that her reaction to it is her reaction to it. Whatever. But you're a grown ass man. If you want to go meet a buddy and you know that that's going to enable you to be more present with your wife later that night or be a better dad or whatever that is, don't fucking ask her permission. Trust yourself and show her that.
Yeah. Well, and why would they not be? Why would they be passive, Jeff?
I think it's a couple of different things.
Are they afraid of women? Because this is where I go, like, what is it? Like, why are men afraid? Because I've experienced this personally, because I am a strong, I can be direct. I can be, you know, like, I can come across a lot more strongly than I think I do. But even in couples I work with, it's like, why are men afraid of women? And this newfound sort of strength and independence. And like, why is that scary? Why do they feel like they need to shrink? To use your word.
Okay. So I would say number one, the association of vulnerability and weakness. And when a man sees a woman be vulnerable, emotionally expressive, something other than happiness or, you know, you're the greatest thing ever. Their interpretation of that is weakness on behalf of the woman. Oh, she's weak. So now I have to like shrink lower. And it's like, and I will tell this like to men all the time in session, like put the fucking Kleenex down. If your wife wants a Kleenex, she's a grown ass woman. She can stand up and she can go get her own Kleenex. Like she'll ask you what she needs from you. Just sit here and be present. Like, stop making what she's feeling your fault. She gets to feel whatever the fuck she wants to feel. Just sit there and be present. And know
it's not about you.
Yes.
Essentially. Yes. And it kind of ties into the defensiveness that I see with a lot of men. Like, that is there's, you know, a lot of defensiveness. And I don't know that's connected to the shrinking. I mean, I'm like, why do they shrink? Like, why are they shrinking? Why is it so scary to have a woman who, you know, who can ask for her own Kleenex or who can make her own money? Like, why that should feel, I mean, I hate to should, but I would think that would be really attractive.
I do think it is attractive, but then I think it's almost like the proverb of catching a tiger by the tail. It's like, shit, what do I do with it now? And it's like, nothing. You just like, even if she says, hey, dumb fuck, give me a Kleenex. Like, she's still a grown ass woman. Like, she can ask for a Kleenex. And
totally,
you know, and it's like, and I've had this conversation with women in session because part of my training was you never give them, you never do that. Like it's a subconscious communication of I'm uncomfortable with what you're feeling. So shut that shit down. Right.
Totally. 100%.
So I don't care. You can have like green snot running down. I mean, I don't care. Like if you want me to get you a Kleenex, you're going to have to ask me to get you. You know, and I've had that conversation with women and I'm like, do you want a Kleenex? Mm-hmm. Well, yes, I want a Kleenex. Okay. Am I a mind reader?
Yeah.
Like, I don't, it's not my job to anticipate your needs. And so there's been some moments there, and I'm going to make a generalization and then you can get mad at me and push back. But it's like, sometimes women can be narcissistic in their thinking where they think he should just know.
Oh, sure. I don't know if that's narcissistic or if it's just hopeful. Dreamer.
Okay. Whichever one.
You know what I mean? It's like,
so we'll leave it at women can be guilty of thinking that, like he should.
For sure. And women resent the hell out of having to ask for, I battle this all day long with women. Like, we resent the hell out of having to ask for what we need. Like, I want him to want to help me. I want him to want to, you know, do the dishes. I want him. And I'm like, that's not going to happen. Like, you're going to need to like ask for what you need. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, and that's, you know, because I'm a big fan of John Gottman, and one of the things that he talks about is love mapping and learning to love your spouse. So I know there's a balance there. There's a balance of, okay, now she's asked for it. So that becomes a part of my love map. So it's like teaching them how to do that. But it just, I guess I would go back to that. The marital relationship is evolving very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we as a field, there are some, obviously, like Estelle Perez and others that are certainly talking about that. But in terms of us having the answers when they needed them, I think we are really, really late to the game. And I think
you think so?
I think we should have. I have clients that are like, I'm not getting a divorce. I'm not giving up half my shit. And, you know, and she may be like, I'm not giving up my house. And like, you know, and so open relationships are becoming a thing.
Totally. Totally.
And they're
way more acceptable.
And it's like, they're okay with it, they co-parent. Mm-hmm. The child doesn't have to go through the experience of mommy and daddy breaking up. And it's like,
I know.
And it's like, okay, that works in, now I'm not into that. I don't get it. Right. Mm-hmm. My brain is not capable of that, but that's my prejudice. I'm not going to impose that on my clients, but it's like, if it works, okay. And it doesn't cause the damage.
I know. And I actually just wrote my latest article on that about, isn't there a better way to do this? Isn't there a better way to do either divorce or relationship, in the sense that it doesn't have to be this messy break up the entire family, you know? And again, this, even as we talk about it, I'm like, the spiritual part of me, right? Like the old messages. We both went
We're
to seminary.
We're kindred in that shit. That's right, girl.
Yes. We both got our education in seminary, which
God hates divorce.
Right. God hates divorce and monogamy and all of this. And so it has really challenged me as a practitioner, you know, like, okay, how does this work? Does it work? Is it healthy for open relationships to exist? Is it a better option than divorce? Is it not? And so, but I see the same thing. I'm like, people are finding these different arrangements because they don't want to put the kids through it, because they don't want to go through it themselves, because they genuinely still love one another, right? Like, these are the marriages, they have great companionship, they have great, you know, whatever, but they're sexless, or they have great passion, but they don't have the emotional intimacy. And so, you know, they're finding different ways to do it. And I'm like, I'm kind of like you. I'm like, all right, you know, never been my thing, but
well, and okay. I will, you know, that you make such a good point, because I know that I have had instances of couples that where they still respect each other as parents. She's a good mom, he's a good dad, and it get annihilated through the divorce process. Like, and the legal divorce process is not your friend. It is not your
it's
friend.
Horrible. Oh, I've been through it. I've been through it. And thankfully mine was relatively, you know, trauma less in terms of the legal process, but I see clients go through it all the time, and it is traumatic.
Yeah. And it's like, I've seen attorneys, and I used to do a fair amount of this kind of work, but it's like, and I've confronted a few that you know, we're friendly, and it's not a judgmental kind of thing, but it's like, fuck, man. Like, do you feel good about how you're perpetuating this right now? And it's
totally.
So that's a whole nother thing. And it's like the fact that we see how destructive the legal system is right now, and we wouldn't be open to other alternatives where an open relationship, however, I mean, I've got a couple going through that right now. The evangelical part of my brain that I want to die is like, I have to like stab it in the head, but it's just like, they're okay with it. Both of them are consensual. They respect each other as mother and father. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So ethically, you need to divorce. Like, is that what I'm going to do? I'm going to shove them into that meat grinder.
I mean, I wonder what the evangelicals would say about that, Jeff. Like, let's just go there for a minute. Like, what's the argument? It's the black and white rigidity of this is me. Because I don't even think it's about what's healthiest at that point. Like, it's about a rigid set of rules, right? Like,
100%.
You don't do this because. And it's not about what's healthy, what actually works. It's about, God said what we think to mean he hates divorce. Don't ever do it under any circumstance. Your soul doesn't matter. No matter what, you stay with this person, and that's why you don't do it. Right?
Yeah, 100%.
So,
and that's
what they would say, I guess.
Christopher Hitchens is a guy. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he had a quote that I always thought was really interesting. He said, "There's always going to be bad people, but religion is the only thing that would cause good people to do bad things." And I think that's
interesting.
And that I think is one of those instances. Good people would say, would be condemning of that rather than saying that works. It's in the best interest of the child. It retains the mutual respect that you have for parents, and it's good with it.
Yeah.
And it's like, it just is. And it's, so now I'll contradict myself. Okay.
Bring it.
When I talk to couples about a healthy view of what the marital relationship should be today, I use a Bible verse.
I love it. I use Bible verses all the time.
I do too. And it freaks people out.
Well,
when I know the Bible, they don't know that we know the Bible as good as we know it. And they're like,
I know.
Holy shit, what are you doing?
I know.
But I
feel like there's truth in it.
Oh, absolutely. There's beautiful truth. The Gospels are wonderful. Fucking if we paid attention to them,
did what they actually say. The stories are beautiful. Like there's part of me that still really loves that. Like, and really, I have this idealistic side of me that is like, yes, of course. Like, marriage is the way, and the family is the way. And, it makes sense. It makes sense. But then as a lived experience, is it making sense anymore? It's so hard because, idealistically, yes, that's the way that we should all go. Like, we find the person, we make it work. The kids have a beautiful example of intimacy and a place of belonging. All their core needs are met. Whatever. The whole beautiful picture. But then, as a lived experience, people just are not getting that.
Right.
And so, that part of me is like, I get it. I get why you would do this, because, frankly, Jeff, like, even in my own marriage, or my former marriage, I would have said we were great parents together. We're great buddies. We skied together, cycled together, but it was lacking that emotional intimacy piece. And so had I been able to make the arrangement where I could go get that elsewhere, but yet keep my family together, would I opt in for that? 100%. You know what I mean? But it didn't work out that way for us. But so I get it. I get it. And I feel like more and more people are choosing that. But there is part of me that feels guilty. I'm like, it's that evangelical old part. That's like, oh my God, am I the devil for like, am I the devil because I'm, you know, thinking this way and, you know, a lot coaching people this way. And it's hard. It's hard. But
I will sometimes reflexively worry about pissing off a God that I don't believe in. It's like when that shit gets in the gray matter, man, it's hard to scrub out, especially when you're as old as I am. But the passage that I find incredibly useful is, and I think the church fucks it up, is the passage of equally yoked. And when I talk to couples about that, I typically say the church fucks this up. But at the time that this was written, you know, the ox was the single most important thing to existence, right? And what was imperative to existence at that is that you had to have two ox of equal strength pushing against the yoke.
Love it.
With that equal strength, because if you have one pushing harder than the other, it's going to break both of their necks and you no longer survive. And so the trick today is, okay, let's leverage the strengths of you guys' relationship so that you can push forward in that same direction. And that seems, when I work with couples, that really seems to unleash them to just kind of start to co-create what that looks like. I mean, we have to do a lot of work on their fucking communication so they're not so goddamn defensive and all that shit and arguing about ketchup and all the stuff that we have to listen
to. And bottles.
Right. Yeah. And, but once you get them to that point, then there's no more cowering. There's no more competition. It becomes a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Oh, it's amazing. It's just getting ourselves and people there.
Do you ever get frustrated that we're able to create this for other people but can't create it in our own lives?
You know what? One of the questions I was going to ask you just earlier was, how do you feel about the fact that we are two divorced people doing a podcast right now about relationships? And I, you know, you have your men's program. I've got women's groups and programs that I'm working on. And you know, I'm like, yeah, how do you feel about that?
Right? It's like a fucking imposter. No,
oh,
I don't.
Oh God, I know, it's so hard. But I actually don't, because I have, I mean, I do, but at the same time, I feel like we have the lens of have been married. We have done divorce, so we can tell you all about what that's like. You know, single parents, like it's so many different angles. So I feel like that's super valuable. But yeah, half the time I'm like, do you know you're talking to a girl who who is divorced?
Here's where I land.
An education.
Oh, right. Here's where I land on that, right? When I hear people say, I could do what you do. Or if I hear people say, people always tell me I could be a therapist because I'm a good listener.
Oh, God.
I always want to say, well, then do it. Because therapy is, you know, for me, and I'd be interested in your take on this, just kind of in your personal evolution, but it has been a blessing and a curse. It is, I fucking love it. I mean, when you have a breakthrough with somebody, when someone trusts us to the level that they trust us, is it that, and I think as I've over time have valued that so much more, like the coming into, even a therapist going to therapy is not like your average person going to therapy.
Oh my gosh. Not even
right. Not even close.
No.
So that vulnerability, but it comes at an incredibly high price.
Absolutely. It changes you as a person, as a partner. What comes to my mind is this quote that I love so much, and I'm going to kind of butcher it, but it's the one that says, you can only meet someone else as deeply as you've met yourself. And so I feel like as therapists, the amount of work we have to do on ourselves or analysis of ourselves, being in our bodies, feeling our feelings in order to meet all of these clients and all of these different scenarios, all degrees of intensity, you know, all of that is so immense that it does change you as a person. And I, you know, back to your initial statement of like, here we are two people, don't we wish we could create this in our own lives? And yes. And I feel like we probably could, you know what I mean? Like, we can and we could, but it changes.
So where
it takes someone who has done an equal amount of work, I think.
Okay. That's the point that I was going to make. And it's like,
and that's hard to find.
I don't know if you like, I've had three different therapists. I'm on my third therapist and they've all had different roles.
On your whole life? You've had three?
Yeah.
Or just, okay.
And you can tell, I'm sure, I'll say, I can tell, but I'm sure you can too. When you go see a therapist, you can tell a therapist that's done their work and a therapist that has not done their fucking work.
100%. How can you tell?
Oh my God. That's a great question. Part of it's just almost subconscious, like, blah, like this is
like a feeling, like a sense.
Yes. Yeah. And it's like, and I had a very fucking expensive Manhattan, New York. What was I paying her? Like $400 an hour or something, man. Jeez. And if I'm paying $400 an hour, I better have some goods after the end of that hour.
For sure.
And so we had, this is an obvious example. This isn't a very good example, but just for shits and giggles, we had, first of all, she went through this, a friend of mine that I have done some work with, and she's a brilliant therapist. And if I could work with her, I'd work with her, but she, you know, we're buddies. She can't be my therapist. And she recommended this woman. So I went into that just kind of like, oh, well, fuck, if she's telling me this woman's going to be great, then I'm going to. And so she's on the East Coast, you know, I'm so bad at time zones. So we missed a session because of time zones. Mm-hmm. And we spent the next session talking about paying for the last session. And it was the weirdest fucking thing. It was like, finally I had to say, look, I don't care. What do you want? Like, I just want this to be over. What do you like?
Yeah.
Well, all of this and that. And it just is like,
sounds like her issue.
It is her issue. And it's like, God damn it, woman. Like you're the therapist. Like I'm fucking advertising myself as that. I don't want to do that. I don't think. Have you ever had a therapist as a client?
Oh, I have two handfuls of therapists as clients.
Really?
I love them.
Just by happenstance or do you like market that way?
Nope, just by happenstance. And I think, you know, word of mouth, like one therapist refers another therapist, but
cool.
But they actually end up being the hardest clients, I think, or they can be. A handful of them are lovely and open and vulnerable, but we're so used to not being the vulnerable ones.
Right.
Oh. Like, so there's a lot of defense there, but I'm going to answer my own question back to like, how can you tell a therapist who does?
Yeah, please do.
I can tell based on their presence, like how capable are they of challenging me? How capable are, and what kind of questions and feedback are they giving me? You know what I mean? Like I can tell if they're asking me questions that, and not that we do a lot of question asking, but if their reflections to me are like surfacey, whatever, but if they like, I can tell within like 10 minutes, hey, they've asked me a question. I'm like, you get it.
Right.
You get it.
That's like, okay. That's the same kind of thing. And it's like, I think you're right. When you say that, that kind of puts words to the experience because it's like, I just threw you a fat pitch and like, you just like took it. Like you didn't even like, are you kidding me?
Totally. Like, like my therapist who I've worked with for years, I adore her. And she's seen me through like having babies and, you know, like on and off, I've seen her as needed, but she's still to this day, she's 10 steps ahead of me. You know what I mean? And she will throw a question. I'll be like blabbing, like, oh, and I'll think I'll know what something's about. And I'll be like, I think it's about this or that. And she'll throw something out there like, Amy, da 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 da. And I'm like, oh, it just gets you in your gut. You're like, right. That's it.
Yeah.
And so I can tell she's done her work, you know, because she continues to be 10 steps ahead of me too.
Right.
Like, she continues to be able to lead me and sort of kind of get me deeper and deeper, deeper into my own layers. Yeah, so, but it's just, it's definitely a sense too.
Yeah. And that's all right.
And age and life experience too.
Okay. But. We have covered, like, what have we covered here? Did we like,
who knows? Are you ADD? I'm totally ADD. So I have no idea.
I like everything. I fashion it.
I mean,
intuitive. Like I tell stories thematically, not chronologically. So it's like, you know, we get talking about marriage and then we get talking about relationship and those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Okay, so what, and then because we're almost at an hour, what do you find, and this is personal, you can refuse to answer if you want, but like, what do you find to be your most difficult challenges in your personal relationship as a therapist?
Ooh, good question. Okay, allow me a moment here. Difficult challenge. I think vulnerability is probably the biggest challenge, strangely enough.
You like, being vulnerable or them matching your vulnerability?
Both.
Okay.
Primarily, you know, me being vulnerable. Even though I know that's key, it's like, you know, kind of getting out of therapist chair and into me, Amy chair, and being vulnerable and then having someone who can match that and who can handle that. And back to my quote about you can only meet someone as deeply as you've ever met yourself. So if I'm vulnerable on that level, and if I'm brave enough and honest enough and courageous enough to then speak it, can someone match that or handle it? Like, you know, can they go there with me? And what are they going to do with it? I think is a big challenge for me. And just kind of opening myself up and not feeling like I have to be perfect. Cause I don't know if you hear this from people, but the number of times I've heard from family or friends, well, you're a therapist. You should know this. Or,
sons of bitches. That is,
you know, and I'm like, okay, but I'm still a person. Like, I'm still a person who has my own wounds and my own stuff that gets in the way. And, you know, I need a safe space.
Right. I need to be loved. I need to be comforted. Like,
thank you, Jeff, for calling it out. I need to be accepted. I need to be loved. I need to be comforted. I need all of that. And so just even owning that sometimes and being vulnerable, asking for it.
That's probably the biggest in the relationships that I have had post-divorce, which would be two that I would use as any reasonable data, is the when I choose to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And I do it not because I like it. It's like ice plunges. I do ice plunges not because I like them, but I know that they're good for me. And vulnerability is an ice plunge for me. And when I hear you're the fucking therapist, I'm telling you, I have a rage in me that is like, and I have to leave. Like, I have to get away from that. It's like, I just asked you for comfort. Yeah. And when you deflect, cause I can be a dick. I can tuck this shit away. I know it's not healthy for me and I know it's not healthy for our relationship, but when I put that out there and your response is, well, you're the therapist. It's like,
okay, yeah.
Yes, I am. And now I am going to say something that's going to crush your soul.
Because it's just so frustrating. It's like the expectation is that we can't be flawed or real or have needs or that we're only there to, you know, that we just caretake and can't receive caretaking or, you know, it's just so frustrating. So you actually leave.
Oh, I have to physically remove myself. I can't. It's an
Did you rage?
I will say something
mean.
I will say something that will cut to the core because I'm good at that. And
so let's name it. What is that? What is that?
I have some sociopathic tendencies.
Oh God, Jeff, really?
Amy, I don't judge. That felt very judgmental.
No, was that judgmental? I don't think you're.
Okay, let me describe it and then you tell me what it is.
Okay, but I also, just really quickly for listeners out there, I also feel like you have some extreme thinking. Are you really?
I'm pretty sure.
Sociopathic.
I don't think you're. I don't think our listeners are surprised by you saying that. Listeners just said, "No shit, Amy."
Yeah.
I don't know. Here's what it is. Okay, so I had a buddy of mine, just a great guy, and he had so many mantras, but one of his mantras was, "Don't fuck with me, I'll fuck with you. But if you fuck with me, it's on." And so that's, and I'm not saying that, like, I probably felt that way before, but it's like, there is a part of me that when I have chosen vulnerability and then I'm acting in that vulnerability and get rejected.
There it is.
I want you to hurt.
See, that's what I was going for. Leave. I'm like, what is that? What's the rage?
I was a fat kid. Come on, Amy. Mm. I grew up the fat kid hating myself. Mm. So when I get rejected in vulnerability, I'm being called the fat kid.
And totally.
Then I have to
And then you want to punish, hurt. Like, I'm going to make you hurt as badly as you just hurt me.
Because all
like,
of those, all those feelings that I used to suppress through food, it's like now they're just there. And it's like, and it's, I have control over it. It doesn't, I did not, there was certainly a period of time in my life where I did not have control over it. It still had control over me. Sure. I now have total control over it, but I'd be lying if I said it wasn't there.
Yeah.
I mean, I gotta go.
I'm going to be your therapist.
Oh, here we go. All right. I'm on the couch.
I wonder what would happen if you just sat with it. Because in a way it's like you get vulnerable and then you run because it hurts too bad. When they say, well, you're the therapist, and I get it because I am one. And I
think okay. Since I'm the client and you're the therapist, what should I do in that moment?
Okay. Well, I'm not going to should you, but like, what if you sat
in it? I want you to should me.
Okay. But what if you sat in it and said, oh, like that's a deeper, like just to yourself or verbalize, like, ooh, like I want to rage so badly. That hurts so badly.
The thought that I have now is
so unsafe. I feel so, because like, that's like fight or flight, right? Like I want to run. This feels so unsafe.
It's more of a conscious thought. The conscious thought is I had to take that in childhood. I don't have to take it now.
Hmm.
And
so really it's about your child self. Sorry, Jeff.
Well, it's the having been ridiculed and, you know, and I'm more of a whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger, but it is like, you know, so much of my childhood was being made fun of about being fat and then having to like laugh with like,
that's such a good joke. It doesn't hurt. Right. It doesn't hurt.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't have to take it. And that's interesting. I will give some thought to when I make myself vulnerable and it's said to me, well, you're the therapist. And I think it's not, I'm saying that like it's been a process of like, hey, I don't like it when you say that, because I am really trying to show up in this relationship, not as a therapist, but as someone who just needs love and comfort. And so then when I do show up that way and you say you're the therapist, like, I just really don't have to take that. And
I shut down. I'm going to think on it too, Jeff. That'll be next episode.
Are you going to fix me? God damn. Are you going to send me a bill for this?
How many? Okay. First of all, did it actually like produce anything? So you're not paying me unless it produces anything.
Oh, so you're kind of like an injury lawyer, like no recovery, no fee.
Like totally. And also like in all the years that I've known you, have I fixed you? And also you don't need fixing.
Okay. That's all solid.
You're great, Jeff, the way you really are. I've always admired you. I've always been incredibly intimidated by your intelligence and your insight.
Jesus.
So
we need to talk a lot more.
Okay. That only comes every now and then.
All right. That's okay. So that's round one. And that is great discussion. And I think it's good. I think it's good. For one, I think the content is good for our listeners just to be able to hear some of the things that are going on, some of the challenges that are that are in marriage. But I think the other thing that is good, and I hope you as men that are listening tune into the dialogue that Amy and I are able to have based on our mutual respect for each other. And it is. I consider Amy as good a therapist as I am. I am awful.
I love it.
And,
thank you.
And that this is the kind of dialogue that you want to be having in your relationship, and what your wife wants, is for you to show up and stay present and not make it about you. And Amy, I'll let you have any final thoughts that you want to have on our discussion today.
Yeah. Well, I echo that. I think women do. I speak as a professional and a personal here, a person. I think that women do want a backbone, strength. They want a man who knows himself, who can speak to that, who can handle their femininity, so to speak, their softer side, but also their stronger side. I love the discussion about what is marriage currently, because I feel like so many circles we're not talking about it. It's happening everywhere. Right. You know what I mean? Like in relationships where it's like, God, we're really strong here, but I'm really struggling here, but everybody's afraid to talk about it, I think, because not afraid, but we're timid in terms of talking about how do we solve this problem with marriage.
We're supposed to have the answers, right? I mean, we're supposed to have the answer. We don't have,
but the conversation, like you said, the conversation is the important part from my perspective. Like agreed. The couples I work with, the ones that are able to really have the healthiest relationships are the ones who truly do have that sort of emotional intimacy where they can talk about all these things. And it's not a threat. They're not defensive. It's just two people showing up, equal ground. Here's where I am. Here's where you are. Respect, you know, tolerance, love, all of it. So,
Well, Amy doesn't know this, but she has been deemed the female residential expert for the Man Made podcast. So she will be henceforth going forward will be a regular part. So she will be checking in periodically to make sure that we don't get too far off into any sort of archaic, self-deluded form of masculinity.
Madness.
Yes. That's right.
Oh my gosh. That's so exciting. I'm so honored, Jeff. Thank you.
And I cannot thank you enough. It has been such a pleasure, an absolute pleasure. And I can't wait to do this again.
Likewise, in all ways.
All right. Thank you.